take this opportunity and welcome members to this important meeting of the Joint Standing Committee on Defence, and welcome the Minister of the Department and the Head of Department, the Secretary of Defence, and the Ombudsman Dube, and the whole delegation from the department. Are there any written apologies for this meeting? If they are, can they be presented? The committee secretary.
Chair, can you hear me?
Yes. You are loud and clear.
Okay, Chair, there are two apologies that I've received. The one is from the minister. She is busy with a SADC troika. And the other one is from the deputy minister. He's also has an engagement. And Ms. Beekers told us he will join us a bit later. So from my side, that's all apologies. And also the Secretary for Defense. She has taken ill, Chair.
She's what?
The Secretary for Defense. I think she's ill, Chair, so she won't be able to join us.
Okay. Okay. So we're having this meeting without the minister and the deputy minister and the secretary of defense.
Can I maybe come in here? Are you able to hear me?
Yes. Who's raising is that?
Dr. Isofen. Yes. So we are from the Defence Force Service Commission, but I see my colleagues are not online. We were supposed to do a presentation, so I think they probably have the wrong link. So I'm just going to try to get them online. So we are the commissioners from the Defence Force Service Commission.
Oh, yeah. Let's engage with the co-host there, Mr. McKay. And then I think they'll be able to help in resending the link. Resend the link to those who are not here so that they can join us. But the meeting cannot stop because of... you know, we are making a quorum. There are the apologies. Any comment on the apologies? Okay. Apologies, therefore, are accepted. We understand that if when duty calls, some of the things are left out, and we are, you know. May I take this opportunity, therefore, to present the agenda? The agenda is circulated. Can you fly the agenda?
Gunther will assist us here. Gunther? Is it clear, Chair?
Yeah, it is. It is clear. There's the agenda, members. Any mover for adoption of the agenda?
I move. I so move, Chairperson.
Who is moving?
It's Honorable Nkosi.
Honorable Nkosi is moving. Any seconder?
Honorable Bartlett is seconding. Okay.
Honorable Bartlett.
Yes.
Oh, thanks a lot, Honorable Bartlett. So. Let me take this opportunity again to welcome Advocate Dube, who will do the presentation on the complaints that we received, about the misconduct and other issues related to the issues that they'll be talking to as the military ombudsman. We know that this report took a very long time to compile, mostly not because people were not, they didn't want to do their work, but it's because of the conditions under which we are living. COVID has changed everything in the way we do our business and lives. To have public hearings, you've got to have people sit at here and ask them questions. And with social distancing and all, it became very difficult. We understand why it took this long. May I give over to you to take us through the reports? Over to Advocate Du, the one who's making the presentation. And may also introduce your team. I take it that all of you know members of the Joint Standing Committee. So we don't need to do an introduction. You may continue, Advocate.
Honorable Sir, thank you very much to you and members of the Joint Standing Committee. Speaking is the military ombud, Lieutenant General Retired Masondo, who's accompanied by the staff in the office, mainly the staff in the operations environment. I would like to commence by just expressing our gratitude, Chair, for the opportunity to account to your committee on the work that we've been doing as the office with regard to the complaints that we receive from members of the public with respect to the official conduct of South African National Defence Force members. If I may proceed then, Chair and members, with introductions. First, I would like to introduce Advocate Dube, who's Chief Director Operations, and will be the one who will be making the presentation. Next to her is Mr. Velile Jonas, who's the Director Investigations within the Operations Environment. And next to him is Mr. Johan Baer, who's Director Intake and Analysis, also within the operations environment. On my left, Chair, is the Director Executive Support, Sindile Mazibuko. Next to her is Director Legal, Crystal Pillay. And next to Crystal is Annalise Velgemoot, who's leading our planning strategy and policy environment. And last but not least, Chair, is Mr. Mfeka, who's our IT specialist and the one who's supporting us to ensure that we're able to interact with your committee, Chair. With those remarks then, without wasting time, hand over to Advocate Dube to actually continue with the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Military Ombud and Chairperson. To kickstart the presentation, we thought it was important to reflect on the mandate of the office insofar as the conduct of members of SANDF is concerned. The Military Ombud is mandated in terms of Section 4, Subsection 1C of the Military Ombud Act to investigate complaints from members of the public regarding the official conduct of members of the Defence Force. You will note in the Act that the Act does not define what official conduct is, but we have generally accepted that any allegations of misconduct against members of the Defence Force while conducting their official duties, including those duties that they performed during lockdown, does fall under the ambit of official conduct. Why we say that is it is because the Military Ombud Complaints Regulations of 2015, in fact, does provide a definition. And it defines official conduct as follows. Official conduct is any act or omission committed by a member of the Defence Force in the execution of his or her duties including that of a member deployed to another state. Now that we know what the mandate of the office is in relation to official conduct, we now presenting to you the total number of complaints that we've received in the financial year 2021. During the previous financial year, we received a total of 56 complaints from members of the public that were complaining about the conduct of soldiers. Now, these complaints range from allegations of assault, damage to property, the use of excessive force, and just general heavy-handedness in the way in which the soldiers were handling members of the public when enforcing the lockdown regulations. We have noted that 56 is the highest number of official conduct complaints that has been received by the office since establishment. This high influx of official conduct complaints, we believe, can be attributed to the fact that soldiers were deployed during March of 2021 to assist in the enforcement of lockdown regulations. Just to continue on the statistics of official conduct cases per financial year, to give you a context so that you can see what we mean when we say 56 is the highest number that the office has received in a single financial year, we have given an indication of the number of official conduct cases that we've received since establishment. For an example, in the year 2018-19, we received one. And if you look at in the financial year 2017-18, we had a slight increase, 12 complaints were received. And then of course, there was a decline in the subsequent years, 18-19, 19-20, and then the sharp increase in the financial year 2021. In the current financial year 21-22, we have received only one so far. So what does it mean with regards to the percentage of these cases? We are saying 56 is the highest number that we've received per financial year. However, we thought it's important to also compare with the complaints that we have regarding conditions of service. Now, in the previous financial year, we had a total of 297 new complaints that were lodged with the office. 212 of those related to conditions of service of members of SANDF. And you know, we've spoken about the 56 that relate to official conduct. And then we have a category that we refer to as other, and that's a amounts to 29 of complaints that we have received. Even though we have received a significant number of official conduct cases in 2021, we do note that these still constitute a small percentage when we look at the total number of matters that we have dealt with. So complaints about conditions of service constitute 71% of the total number of complaints that we have received. And the official conduct complaints amount to 19%, and the remaining 10% relate to the other category of matters. Go to the next follow, yes. So to give an indication as to how we have dealt with this matters, the 56 that we have received. So these are the statistics of our performance insofar as the investigations of these matters is concerned. Of the 56 that we have received, we have finalized 39. There are currently 17 cases that are being investigated. That then makes a finalization rate to be around 70%. Now, how have we dealt with the 39 that we have finalized? So you'll see in the graph that we've given you, we've indicated how we've dealt with these 39 matters. Perhaps it's important just to talk about the highest number, the 24 that you see at the bottom, 24 matters that we've dismissed. We have put a note there that during the lockdown, we have received a number of complaints that were lodged through the various social media platforms, for example, your WhatsApp, Twitter, and Facebook. But what tended to happen is the complainant will then send just a one-liner to say, I'm complaining about the soldiers who assaulted members of the public, without providing the detail as to where, in terms of the location, the incident happened, as well as the details of who was assaulted. In the office, we have intake officers whose main role is to assist complainants in lodging complaints and ensuring that the complaints are lodged in line with the regulations. In line with the regulations, which will include, for example, the completion of a complaint form. However, despite all their efforts, we were unable to obtain the information that is required in order to ensure that a valid complaint is lodged. And so that is why you see the high number of those cases that we have then had to dismiss, because we're unable to proceed due to the complaint not complying with the regulations. And of course, there is the one matter that we have investigated and finalized, and in the end, the military ombud upheld the case, and that relates to the interactions of the soldiers with the Khosa family. Some complaints we were able to resolve, and others we referred to other relevant institutions for investigation. Just to now proceed to the 17 cases that are currently under investigation, we thought it was important to give you a summary of those cases so that you can have a sense of what is it that members of the public are complaining about. For example, if you take the first case of Mr. M, serial number 1, who is a resident of Shawelo in Soweto. He alleged that on the 29th of March at about 18:25 in the evening, the members of SANDF and JMPD officers had dragged him out of his yard when he was allegedly trying to record a video. So he observed an assault of 4 young men in the street, the assault allegedly by the SANDF and JMPD officers. So when they saw him trying to record a video, they went into his yard, dragged him out, assaulted him, and he suffered serious chest face injuries, went to his doctor the following day. But he says he was afraid to go and open a case of assault to the police because members of the SAPS were also present. And so he felt that he would not receive the assistance he requires. We thought it was also important to indicate the case of Mr. T, who is a tavern owner in the Eastern Cape, who alleged that on the 11th of April, members of FAPS and the SANDF came into his tavern late in the evening. They confiscated, he alleged that they actually stole the alcohol, which to the value of 300,000. There was a cash of 25,000 in his cash register, which he alleges that they stole, and also assaulted him. He does have a video footage of the incident, and also has a witness, a tenant who also witnessed this incident. So these are just the examples of the cases we are currently investigating. You will note what we have done is to give you an indication at the end of the column of what is the current status. The cases from, if I may just indicate, from serial number one, up to serial number nine, we have completed the investigations, and those cases are at different stages of finalization. Either a final report is en route to be signed off by the military ombud, or a preliminary report is currently being quality assured. So from the 17 cases that we carried over from the previous financial year, we have finalized 9 investigations and are just busy writing up reports. We are still left with about 8 to conclude the investigation in those matters. Of the 8, perhaps one can just reflect on serial number 10. This is a complaint from a Ms. J, who is a resident in Cape Town, who alleged that on 20 March 2020, soldiers were patrolling during the day, had shot and killed her dog. Now, this complaint, this video was shot by a neighbor, according to the complainant. It's available and has been circulating on social media. It is one of the cases that was impacted by the travel restrictions because investigators needed to go and visit the complainant, not only for the purposes of interviewing her as well as the neighbors, but to conduct an on-site inspection. Now, of course, we are unable to conduct any on-site inspections during the travel restriction in the lockdown period. We've had to wait until travel was allowed so that investigators are able to visit complainants and conduct on-site inspections as well as interviews. In a nutshell, Chair, those are the matters that we are currently investigating. And we hope that it does provide the update that the committee has requested. We have noted the challenges that we did encounter, which has been the impact of the lockdown on investigations. As you had noted, Chair, in the opening, so what happened is during the first quarter, although majority of these complaints, the incidences happened during the first quarter of the financial year, we were not able to commence with the investigations, and we're only able to start investigation in earnest in the third quarter of the financial year. And so our turnaround time for investigations was indeed negatively affected by that. And that is why we were not able to finalize them in the 12-month period as the target that the office has. We thought it was also important just to note the difficulty that some members of the public experience in terms of accessing facilities such as downloading and printing the prescribed complaint form for the purposes of complying with our regulations and during the lockdown. And so some of them were only able to provide us with additional information very late into the year, because certainly in the first quarter, when there was a total shutdown, they were not able to go and access those facilities. So that is how the lockdown had impacted our regulations. Thank you, Chair.
Chair and honorable members of the committee, that brings us to the end of our presentation. We're now ready to respond to your questions, Honorable Chair.
Thanks a lot, Medube. Thanks a lot, Manesu. Honourable members, let's take the next presentation so that we debate, we discuss these presentations all in one place, just to save time. Is that in order?
Chairperson, if I may, these two presentations differ so much from each other. It's got no relations with each other. Maybe we should finish the military ombud and maybe then deal only with a you know, service commission. That's just my suggestion.
Make so more we sense deal to with me. The you suggest that we deal with the next one should be the defense service, né? And then we take questions. Or do
no,
you suggest
no, we... no. We first. No, my suggestion is that we first take the questions and deal with the military ombud. Then we finish the military ombud. And then we deal with the service commission.
Okay. How do other members feel?
Chairperson, Dennis here, if I may.
Yes, Honourable Dennis. Let me say there's a suggestion.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair.
Yes.
Chair, I think that... I think that it would be good if we could just deal with the ombud and then we could release them. I mean, there are, I think, seven of them sitting around the table. It would be good if we could deal with them to conclusion and then release them and then focus on the next section. I think they've given us a fairly short list and there shouldn't be too many questions. So I'd also agree with Mr. Murray and say let's proceed with the question now.
Honourable Reda, your hand is up. Honourable Ngozi.
Thank you very much, Chair. Greetings to your good self and members. Chair, I thought for us to save time, it will be prudent to have all the presentations. Then after that, when we deal with questions or comments, inputs, we do them at once. That was my proposal. Actually, I was supporting you when you are saying how about we deal with all the presentations. Then when we come with questions, we know that each and every presentation, maybe if you want to ask something, we note it down. When we deal with questions, we'll deal with the questions in all the presentation in order to save time. Because if we are saying we are going to do a presentation, we ask questions, we move to the next one. I don't know, but I'm proposing that. Thank you very much.
I second the proposal, Chair, Honorable Nkosi.
Yeah, both suggestions were seconded. The suggestion that we deal with this one, maybe give it 20 minutes and or... That is my little addition, and or we deal with the matters after the other presentations. If there are no lots of issues, then there'll be very few questions at the end about the matter. So can I, Honorable, if you are comfortable with this, can we just take all the presentations and let members note the questions?
Chair, it's you're the chair. I still believe what I do because it's two total different things. But I mean, it's your call. You're the chair.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the situation. Now, let me look at this. I'm looking at the situation where people are crammed in that little office and they've got to wait until 9 o'clock. Maybe let's take questions on this one and only give 20 minutes for the questions. And if there are to be other questions at the end related to the ombudsperson, those questions could be answered in writing. Honorable FL, I just think that let us release the ombudsperson's office. Yeah.
It's fine, Chair. It's fine.
Yeah, let us give them 20 minutes. Magay, will you be able to I mean, not only 20 minutes. If there are lots of questions, we can, you know, add some other minutes on top. Honorable members, there's the presentation of the Ombudsman of Defense. Can members engage? We understand that it took so long to get where we are because of the conditions that we operate under. Any questions? Anything? Any method? Any comments from the members? The floor is open.
Chairperson, there are three hands that I see that have been that has been raised. So it'll be your choice to.
I see the hand of Shelembe, Kenny Mutamai, Honourable Mare, in that order. Honourable Shelembe, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Also, let me express my excitement.
Honorable Shalembe, is it my phone or is it where you are?
The presentation has been done.
Mr. Shalembe,
no.
You can't hear.
No, Shalembe, his connection is very, very bad.
Honorable Shalembe.
The question is...
Honorable Shelembe.
I don't know what's wrong, but...
Honorable Shelembe. Honorable Shelembe.
Yes, can you hear me now?
No, we really cannot hear you. Your line is very, very poor.
Yes, can you hear me now? Yes, can you hear me now?
No, we can't hear you very well. Your line is very bad.
Okay.
Can I come back to you after the next speaker?
Okay.
After Honorable Mutamai, then we'll come back to you. Okay. You'll never lose this time.
Okay.
Honorable Mutamai.
No, Chairperson, the Honorable Nkosi Utere Ntwenegiri Kaibua, we led a very same thing.
Okay, thanks, Honorable Mutamai. Honorable Akbare Marey.
Thank you for... thank you very much from the office of the for presentation. I have basically I am obviously very concerned that it seems like a very low number, and that might damage the image or the perception of the image of effectiveness of the Ombud. Whether they have looked at that and whether they are concerned about that and what they are doing about that. Then, Chair, my follow-up one is, are there any cases on the Collins Causa case that are still outstanding? Because that was about a year ago. And then if they are outstanding or not, do they keep the complainants informed of the progress? Because it's quite important to keep contact with those complainants and whether letters are then sent to them on a regular basis. Then my second one is, what are the constraints? If they receive all these numbers and it is well into the 50s that they mentioned or even more, what are the constraints when dealing with complaints that were submitted to their office? Is it the complexity of the cases? In other words, if it's too complex, then you might decide not to investigate or take the case on. Are there budgetary constraints or cost constraints that might influence that? Are there cooperation with other departments or even other countries or governments? And then also sensitivity of subjects. Do that influence what you do, or sensitivity of persons involved? And then I also want to ask, it seems like the number of cases that are investigated seems to be ordinary soldiers, acting soldiers at roadblocks or doing patrols in neighborhoods and things like that. It seems like it is majority of the cases are ordinary soldiers acting against civilians predominantly. Is that primarily what you are investigating, or are there also cases of and you might decide not to divulge the details to us, but are there also other cases of more prominent leaders in the defense force that you are investigating? Thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Who is the next on? Honorable Shalembe. Honorable Shalembe.
Chairperson, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Chairperson, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. No, Chairperson, okay, thank you. Chairperson, I'm checking, with the Office of the Military Ombudsman, the issue of, members of the community say they are taking the pictures when soldiers, are doing the wrong things whatsoever. Is there anything wrong if members of the community are doing that? Because I'm trying to see. And secondly, if members of the SANDF are coming, with members of the SAPS together doing all these wrong things, what are other systems of communicating with the military ombuds, especially people on the ground? Because not all of them who are aware where to report at these cases. Because I'm looking at an issue now because people will now be afraid to take pictures when members of the SANDF are. Is there any wrong if members of the community are doing that? If no, and then why members of the SANDF are doing that if they know, when it comes to the code of conduct as members of the SNDF. I'm looking at that situation, if maybe I can be given a clarity on that. Also, how quickly they can communicate with the Office of the Ombuds if they can't use the police stations. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Shalembe. I was able to follow here and there, but I missed quite a lot in your input, in your question. Is there another comment that anything that other members want to say, either ask a question or comment? In the absence of that, I'll give over to the Ombuds office, to answer the questions that are posed by the members and to clarify some of them. Thanks. Over to you, General.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just before we commence with responding, I just need to get clarity from the first question of Honorable Mare, where he said he's concerned about the low number of complaints. Is it concerned about the fact that we've only received 56, or I'm not sure what that question is? If he could just clarify that, and then we'll respond, Chair.
Honorable Mane, do you think the cases should have been 1,000 or something like that?
No, I'm referring to that triangle. If you look at that triangle, you will see that with the large number of complaints submitted to them, you will see that there's a very, very few ones that end up in the top. So most are dismissed. So, and I'm just saying that there might be a challenge with the perception amongst the public that there are more cases dismissed on technical grounds, it seems like, then there are cases being investigated, and I'm just there's just a concern that people might not have trust and faith in the ombudsman's office if there are so few cases that are really eventually investigated and brought to the book. That's what I'm referring to.
Yeah, so I think you do get the context in which the question is asked, the Honorable Brez, that they try to put in the context. And, you know, and that during your explanation, I remember you were saying that some of the matters are because of the way people report cases. I was assaulted by a soldier. So soldiers are assaulting somebody in village this or in this township. Do you have anything, you know, those are the things that, you know, from your explanation, I was able to follow. But let's see, will you respond to the question?
Thank you very much, Chair and Honorable Members. If I may, thanks, Honorable Maria, for the clarity. If I may then maybe respond. Yes, from the surface, when you look at the number of complaints that have been dismissed, you just think that perhaps there isn't much work that has been done. But I would like to explain that these can be categorized into two. Out of those that are dismissed, there are those that have been investigated, but it was found that the facts advanced as part of the complaint were such that the complaint had to be dismissed. But there was a challenge, especially because these complaints were lodged during the lockdown period. And as indicated in the presentations, they were lodged through social media platforms. Now, our act is very prescriptive in terms of how complaints should be lodged with the office, and that these should be lodged per in writing per complaint form, which complaint form actually gives us an opportunity or sufficient information for us to be able to continue with the investigation itself. So there were many follow-ups with the complainants to try and get them to actually complete the complaint form. In some instances, you know, they were just required to provide maybe information that would be covered in the complaint form so that then we can be able to proceed with investigation. But I will also hand over to Advocate Duba perhaps to elaborate further on the issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Ombud. It is indeed correct that the number that we dismissed, it was on the basis that the complaint did not contain the detail that is required to enable the office to commence with investigation. However, Honorable Marae, perhaps it should assist if you would also consider on the summaries of the current cases that we have, because so we do indicate which matters we have investigated and concluded, and what do we propose to be the finding. So while you might, it might seem as if there is a low number of matters that have been investigated by the office and completed the investigation. However, we thought that by providing the status on the 17 active cases that we have, because we are indicating at what stage of the investigation they are, the picture will then change once, for example, the 9 matters that we've concluded the investigation and the report will be released soon. So if you then have a total picture of all the matters that of the 56 that we have received, the number certainly will change in terms of what we have dismissed and what we have investigated. Thank you.
Thank you, then, Chair, if I may continue. I'll skip the latter part and refer it to the latter part of the question on cases, further cases related to the Colin Khoza that may be outstanding. I'll refer that to Advocate Dube. But I just wish to respond to the question whether there are any constraints in terms of dealing with the cases, whether budgetary or otherwise. So far, I would indicate that in terms of our budget, it has not really constrained our investigation of cases. The only challenge that we had was during lockdown when there were restrictions on movement, especially to other provinces, and therefore our members couldn't travel and conduct in loco inspection. And of course, our office is independent and impartial, and therefore we do these investigations without fear or favor. So there's no sensitivity in terms of whoever could be involved in the case. There's no such sensitivity at all. Okay, and lastly, from my side, perhaps also to respond to the question that indicates that it looks like our complaints, or rather the complaints that we investigate, are mainly those of ordinary soldiers. I want to confirm the cases we have received in totality, they cover ordinary soldiers. We have not received a complaint about a senior member of the Defense Force. And I think the reason for that is that it's ordinary soldiers who are actually interacting with members of the community. And of course, problems arose out of that interaction. So that's why you find a trend as if there are no senior SANDF members that are involved. I would then request Advocate Dube then to complete answering the question in terms of other Colin Khoza related cases.
Thank you, Ombud. So just to confirm that the investigation relating to the Colin Khoza matter was finalized and the report was submitted. What happened last year is that the minister had assigned the military ombud powers to conduct an investigation, and that assignment is provided for in terms of Section 6, Subsection 11 of the Military Ombud Act. And so the report of that investigation was submitted to the minister for implementation. So insofar as that investigation is concerned, it has been completed and the report has been sent through. So there is no any outstanding case relating to the Colin Khoza that still requires to be investigated.
If I may then proceed, Honorable Chair, to the question by Honorable Shalembe. I want to confirm from the point of view of the office, there's really nothing wrong with members of the community taking pictures of soldiers who are involved in wrongdoing. In fact, if such pictures are taken, they actually help a lot in terms of our investigation. However, it needs to be pointed out that during the initial stages of the deployment, soldiers were actually averse to being taken pictures because obviously they understood the fact that if those pictures are taken, then you know they will be in trouble and would actually intimidate members of the public. And that would sometimes happen even in front of the SAPS members. So I want to confirm there's nothing wrong with taking pictures from the point of view of our office, and actually taking of those pictures assist the office. Then the second question was, how quickly can members of the public make contact with the office, especially in instances where perhaps you know they are worried about reporting to the police because maybe the police were also on the scene. Well, as an office, we, especially before the lockdown was enforced, we tried to communicate extensively with members of the public in terms of how the office can be contacted, especially also enhancing that by giving out social media contacts of the office, so that people can be free to contact us and we can be able also to continue doing our work during the lockdown. So the speed with which they are able to contact our office, if they have contact details, is purely dependent on the members of the public themselves, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. If maybe we didn't answer the questions clearly, we are open to follow up. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Ambud. Honourable members, do people have other follow-up questions? We'll give 10 minutes for those follow-up questions so that we can move to the second presentation. I see the hand of Honourable Ryder. I see the hand of Honourable Teko Mafanya, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I'm not going to turn my video on again. I'm at Acacia Park and the connection here is shocking. Chair, mine is not a question, it's merely a comment. And it's an observation, and I want to appreciate what the Ombudsman has told us tonight and in a very frank and open manner, and I appreciate their inputs. But my biggest takeaway, Chair, is that the narrow prescription of the process that is defined by the legislation it makes it quite difficult for people to report and process complaints. And I think that the lack of historical cases is more a reflection of the fact that previous deployments have mostly been outside of our borders, making it less likely that reports would be forthcoming, especially in the prescribed format. And I think perhaps we need to look at the limitations that the regulations and the legislation puts on the reporting process. And perhaps the Ombudsman can guide us from their perspective if they think that the prescriptions are too draconian and too limiting, and if it actually makes for problematic processing on their side. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Mafanya.
Thank you very much, Chair, and the colleagues. Thanks for the presentation as well. It's not even a question, it's just a submission, is that all of us, including the General's Bay, during even the strictest measures of the lockdown, we were permitted as essential services to conduct even our oversight. They were also permitted to do investigations. The delay, the excuse that it was not easy for them to do work because of the lockdowns. We were given special permits ourselves to do our oversight as such. But neither that was neither there. There were also cases of sexual harassment that were reported in different cases by the soldiers themselves among themselves, including people, ordinary people who could complain about one thing or the other. Now, my submission is that there is lack of a campaign on the part of the Ombuds, so that ordinary people, men and women out there, are aware where their offices are, how easily are they accessible. Because from where I sit, you can ask any ordinary person where their offices are. There is no way they could tell you how to go about these processes. So there needs to be a campaign to populate the work of the Ombuds. That's my submission. And more so also, I would also want to concur with Honorable Dennis, that there are also, we have outside missions where we couldn't be saying that it's something, nothing happens there out there. There could be, but the methods of complaints being lodged to the Ombuds might be also a problem in terms of our international soldiers in international countries. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Mafanya. And where can we get this? Why can't we have some of these forms that the advocate said that you need to form to fill a particular form? You know, where can those forms be accessed? Why are they not keeping copies at the nearest police station? Or what if a person goes and complains, lay a charge against the police at the police station? Then what happens in that? Like, can the police take over the case and go to the base and present them? I don't know how that is going to go. But I see there are two hands again. Galaxy number 8, and I don't know who that is. So let me give this opportunity to Honorable the co-chair. Welcome, Honorable Kaba.
Yes, good day. Thank you very much, Comrade Koche. I only have one question. What did the general say is their turnaround time from the time a complaint is lodged? I just want to make an example that in the judiciary, a judge must deliver his judgment within 3 months, and if he or she does not deliver the judgment within 3 months, he is called to account to give reasons why he could not deliver it within the prescribed 3 months. That's how they monitor performance of their colleagues. And in the case of the Ombuds, what I can't remember what they said is their turnaround time, so that we take it up from there. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Co-Chair. Is there another hand? Let me check. Ombuds, may you respond to the questions so we can move to the next presentation?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members. If I may start with the remark by Honorable Ryder. I want to indicate that as an office, we have a notice that during the course of our work that there are difficulty or restrictive measures in terms of our act. And currently we have been given authority by the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans to engage in the review of our act, and therefore during that process we'll be looking at all the areas of our work that hinder the particularly the speed with which we can be able to deal with the investigation. For instance, if I may mention, one of the areas we are thinking of looking into is the issue of own initiative investigation. Because as it is currently, all we can do is to wait for complaints, even when we can witness that there is a problem elsewhere. If there's no complaint as an office, there's essentially nothing that we can do. Coming also to the comment by Honorable Mafanya, to the effect that as essential workers or services, sorry, we were given permission to move around. It may be true to some extent, but it should be understood against the backdrop of the fact that in as much as perhaps we could move around in Gauteng and all that, but it was difficult to move in to other provinces. But that movement around would also entail our accessibility to the complainants and all, which would have been a very complicated factor. Then when it comes to creating awareness about the office and what we do, there's extensive work that we have done by way of outreach programs. But of course, we ourselves as an office realize that when it comes to members of the public, there's still a lot of work to be done, which is why, therefore, from the office, even before the issue of the lockdown, we've taken a decision that we need to now create further awareness amongst members of the public. It's something that we are continuing to do even now, but initially we are focusing on those areas where the SANDF is deployed, because that's where we are likely to get complaints. But we are also partnering with SALGA, so that through SALGA we are able to enhance our outreach programs to reach even more members of the community. From you, Chair, you asked a question why we can't distribute our complaint form. Form received. So, some time back, especially from the department or the SANDF, that we go around soliciting complaints. So it's something that we are trying to avoid. We want to be dealing with genuine complaints that come from either members of the public, members of the SANDF, or former members of the SANDF. Lastly, coming to the question by the co-chair, Honorable Klaver, on the issue of turnaround times for the work we do. Chair, we are coming from a situation where, for instance, it was taking up to 3 years to deal with a complaint. And the major challenge around then was the issue of responses from the SANDF to our requests for information. And of course, after my appointment, I realized that that was one of the major bottlenecks. And I've been able, therefore, to reach an agreement with the Chief of the Defense Force and Service and Division Chiefs that where my staffs are experiencing problems in terms of prompt responses to the questions that we ask, I can intervene directly with the service or division chief concern from my position as the military ombud. And given that fact, therefore, we have taken a decision that for simple complaints, we want to see the office finalizing those within a period of 6 months. And that complex complaints, at least within a period of 1 year. And of course, we aspire towards even reducing those turnaround times further. But for now, we're working flat out to ensure that at least we can be able to resolve these complaints within the stipulations that we have given through. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Do members of your team want to make additional answers, General?
I can assure you, Chair, that I'm not intimidating them, but they are just shaking their heads. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot. If there is any other matter that may arise when we continue with the discussions, when members ask questions, the questions will be referred to you and will expect you to reciprocate, to do the same, like, you know, answer the questions in writing. With those few words, thank you very much. And thanks for responding promptly. And you were right on time when the meeting opened. You were ready. You were ready for engagement. Thank you. Thank you very much. You are excused. Honourable members, the second item on the agenda is briefing by the Defence Force Service Commission.
Good evening,
Commissioner.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Hello. Yes, I can.
Right. I'm for some reason I'm reflected as Galaxy S8. I don't quite know why, but my name is Ian Robertson. I'm the chairperson of the Defence Force Service Commission. There are six. Can you hear me? I'm wherever I move. Reception is not very good. Can you still hear me?
Yes, I can hear you well.
Good. Thank you. I have six fellow commissioners with me and members of the secretariat. I would like to for them to introduce themselves before we start on our presentation, co-chair. Please, commissioners, can you introduce yourselves?
Good evening to everyone, chairperson and co-chair, honorable members, and everyone that is on the platform. My name is Sabina Kapulusa. Sorry.
Excuse me. May you switch on your video when you do it, you know, just switch it on and then we can switch it off.
Let me try because my network is very bad. That is why I'm using
okay.
even a
cell phone. No, you're welcome. No, we understand. You may continue.
Okay. Sorry.
Don't even try that.
I was going to say, can I proceed?
Yes, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Sabina Sapulusa. I am the Deputy Chairperson of the Commission. Thank you.
Good evening, Chairperson, Deputy Chair, and members of the Parliament. I am Linda Mbana. I'm one of the members of the Commission. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Ziad Esaf. I'm one of the members of the Commission as well.
Order, Chairperson.
Commissioner Mabilani?
Not Mabilani, Mutamai.
Good evening.
It's a problem. When these people, sometimes we are talking to the people, Baba Mudukubu, my own words, they are on inside the blanket. We don't see the people. Each and everyone, when he jumps in, he doesn't introduce himself. But you can see me myself. Why don't they come in? We can see their faces. We must know them.
Honorable Mutamai.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mutamai,
yes.
Honorable Mutamai, raise your hand when you want to talk. We have an icon that's
I did raise my hand and it's a point of order.
I didn't hear you then. They say there are problems with connectivity, and those who
all
can switch on their videos,
all of them
are free to do that. Even if you switch it on for some few minutes so that we see you.
But are we going to know
that? In my language, we say,
how are we going to know that?
Just switch it on for a minute and then switch it off. And I think that will be okay.
Good evening. Chairperson, can you see me? I've turned on my video. Can you see me, Chair?
I can't see you.
I did turn on
yes,
my.
Oh yes, me too.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
my name is.
Yes,
thank you very much.
Here.
Thank you. My name is Salome Mabilane. I'm the commissioner of the Defence Force Service Commission. Thank you.
Commissioner Kumalo.
Good evening, Chair. I am the Commissioner at Defence Service Commission. My name is Gloria Kumalo. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have one other. I've put myself on video. I've got bad reception. We have one further commissioner who's in flight at the moment, flying from Durban to Johannesburg, so he won't be able to join us. And then I must also start on a fairly sad note. One of our fellow commissioners, Commissioner Joe Jongile, the late, he was killed in an armed robbery at his house in East London 10 days ago. We're down to seven commissioners. With that, may I proceed with the presentation, co-chairperson?
Just before that, all the commissioners I introduced there. You are all welcome. And it's really bad to hear that one of us died. And a very violent death for that matter in the commitment of a crime. Criminals killed him. May his soul rest in peace, and may you also be one day soon healed. You know, when you work with a person and they die that way, obviously it will affect all who worked with that person and all the colleagues and family. It's very sad indeed. The Defence Service Commission, we're dealing with the recommendations made from 2013. It's nearly more than 8 years ago. That what we want to check is how far are we with the implementations of those recommendations, man. Secondly, the issues related to infrastructure in the barracks where the soldiers stay. The other is issues related to the military hospitals and matters that were picked by members on oversight visit to different provinces and military facilities. We give you this opportunity to address us and give us that briefing, what happened to the recommendation, the implementation. Thank you. Let me give over to the Commissioner Robertson.
Thank you, Co-Chairperson. We have the presentation flighted there. The scope of the presentation is such it will address the legislative mandate of the Commission, will provide feedback on recommendations made from 2013, the report submitted to the Minister during the financial year 2021, the summary of recommendations tabled during the financial year 2021, and acknowledgements and feedback from the Minister. Next slide, please. Thank you. Just a brief the resume of our what we mandated to do. The Defence Act number 22 of 2010 is mandated in terms of section 62B1. Firstly, on an annual basis, make recommendations to the Minister on improvement of salaries and service benefits to members. Secondly, make recommendations to the Minister on policies in respect of conditions of service. And thirdly, promote measures and set standards to ensure the effective and efficient implementation of policies on conditions of service within the Defence Force, and make recommendations to the Minister in this regard. Next slide, please. Thank you. Feedback on recommendations tabled from 2013. The first permanent commission, which was from 2013 to 2019, made 169 recommendations. It should be noted that the commission has not received any feedback regarding the progress on the implementation of recommendations tabled before the minister. Can I just say that these recommendations, the 169, they've broken down into many, many categories, but I would like to just name a few. I've broken them down into 22 categories so far. There's accommodation / infrastructure. There is allowances of and occupational specific dispensation. There's border protection, Operation Corona. There's career development. There's command and control. There's Department of Defense policies and instructions. There's education, training and development, fraud and corruption, external and internal deployments. There's funding and budget, human resources, medical support services, procurement, reserve force, security at bases and units, tools of trade, and there's transport, uniforms, the building, asbestos within buildings, and lastly but not least, there's the MSDS, Military Skills Development Program. So co-chairperson, all of these 169, we have not received feedback. Let me explain the next two slides. Subsequently, the first permanent commission and the SecDev agreed to establish a task team in 2016. The task team comprised of members of the commission, the human resource division members, and members within the office of the Secretary for Defense. This team was meant to meet on a quarterly basis to discuss progress on the recommendations tabled by the Defence Force Service Commission. But the team only met once due to the unavailability of members from the Secretaries for Defence Office and the Human Resource Division. As a result, the Commission sent a number of letters, but I quote one, on the 10th of November 2017, requesting the status report of progress made in the implementation of the recommendations. In response, an unsigned and undated letter was received directly responding to our letter. Next slide, please. Thank you. Both the interim and the first permanent commission did not have a monitoring and evaluation committee to keep track of the recommendations tabled before the minister. The present commission, some of us are having our second term from January 2019 and January 2020. The current commission has established a monitoring and evaluation committee to monitor the progress on the recommendations submitted to the minister. As I say, none of the recommendations tabled by the first permanent commission were implemented. However, if they were implemented, the commission has not been privy to this kind of information. It must also be noted that acknowledgements of the receipts of these recommendations were received, and the minister has indicated that these reports with recommendations have both been forwarded to the Secretary for Defence and the Chief of the South African National Defence Force for considerations. I might add, the Honourable Co-Chair, that we've had many, many discussions, both within the Commission and with the Minister, to see how we can really move forward. So the next slide is around the mitigation, the measures in mitigation, how we can really move forward on this issue. We continue to conduct follow-up visits to assess the implementation of recommendations, to revive the quarterly meetings with the Secretary of Defence for Defence, HR Division, and the Commission to monitor progress made on the implementation of the recommendations tabled by the Defence Force Service Commission. I had a meeting with the SecDev at the end of April, and we had an in-principle agreement that we want to re-establish the quarterly meetings and take forward our discussions in when the previous SecDev was there, and see how we can find a way, excuse me, to get some of these recommendations implemented. Third one is to strengthen the relationship with the newly appointed Secretary of Defence and the Military Command Council. The fourth one is to request a feedback from the Minister with regard to the progress on the recommendations tabled twice a year. Next slide, please. Thank you. Now I go on to the reports we submitted during the financial year 2021. There are seven reports that we submitted. It's the military, the ICU in the two military hospital in Wynberg in Cape Town, 3 million in Bloemfontein, a follow-up visit to 1 million in Pretoria, Air Force College, a follow-up, Ops Corona follow-up bases, consolidated report of all the three military hospitals, and then a recommendation, lastly, on the cost of living allowance for SANDF members for the financial years 2021-22. Please, next slide. Thank you. The summary of recommendations tabled. I go into a fair amount of detail because I think it's quite important. Recommendations on the intensive care unit at 2 Mill Hospital in Wynberg, Cape Town. The intensive care unit remains one of the biggest challenges for the management of 2 Mill Hospital. It is a fully equipped ICU ward, yet it is not operational because there are no doctors and nurses. As a result, the patients who need critical care are transferred, in other words, outsourced to private hospitals at a high cost. It was therefore recommended, one, that the ICU be reopened, two, the skilled doctors and nurses be appointed for the ICU, three, the Chief of Human Resources in collaboration with strategic role players within the medical health environment, revise and develop a new but more effective healthcare service personnel acquisition policy. The policy should enable the appointment of healthcare practitioners for a 2-month period. May I also say that when we went through you, Co-Chair, when we went to visit some of these military hospitals, there was a ministerial, medical ministerial task team set up in 2014. It was chaired by one of our, at that stage, Professor Mahoba, who became a member of the commission in 2015, one of the commissioners. When we asked the commanding officers whether they'd seen those that report and recommendations, they actually said no, they hadn't seen it. So in a sense, this is 2018, 2019. So in a sense, we were back to square one. Let me move on to report of Ops Corona Basis, the commission was satisfied with some improvements observed on conditions of services at the bases since its first visit in 2019. We went there in 2019. Urgent consideration concerning the accommodation of deployed members, night vision and thermal detection equipment, and 3, medical support needs to be supplied in all deployment areas. Then the follow-up visit to Three Mile Hospital. We conducted a follow-up visit in 2021 as part of its mandatory functions to monitor progress or decline in the conditions of service that might impact on service delivery and the morale of members. The establishment of, can you still hear me?
Yeah, your slides are not moving with the presentation you are making, so but that they are beginning to move now.
Okay, thank you.
They looked at earlier, so you may continue.
Thank you. The establishment of efficient safety and security mechanisms for both staff and patients is crucial and long outstanding. Secondly, a forensic audit is necessary regarding the non-payment or delayed payment of outsourced health-related goods and services to private service providers. And thirdly, the entire human resource structure needs to be revised to accommodate the purpose and aim of 3MIL. This will ensure an efficient, effective, and economical healthcare. Then the next slide, please. The summary of recommendations tabled during the present financial year. The consolidated report of all 3 military hospitals. I'm not going to read those bullet points. I think they are self-explanatory. Then there was a follow-up visit to Air Force College. The aim of the visit, follow-up visit. Can we move, please, to the next slide? Thank you. The follow-up visit to Air Force College was to monitor progress and improvements or deteriorations in the conditions of service, as was recorded during the visit of the first permanent commission in October 2014. The commission is strongly recommending the prioritization of the reallocation of the budget from the Department of Public Works to the Defence Works Formation to ensure that the maintenance and repair of infrastructure of the Air Force College is expedited and fully compliant with the Occupational Safety and Health Act. Finally, the recommendations on the cost of living allowance for SANDF members for the financial year 21-22. SANDF members who are to total cost packages reduced to the medical aid portion as medical assistances is provided for by the SANDF. The department to pursue the implementation of the final leg of the 2018 to 2021 determination for SANDF members, which is separate from the public service. Implementation of the cost CPI increase for SANDF members as a single term determination. Finally, we acknowledge and respond from the minister. The minister has acknowledged the 6 reports submitted. The outstanding acknowledgement is for the letter for the recommendation submitted on the 31st of March. Then the next one is in the acknowledgement received by the commission, the minister indicated that she had instructed the chief of the South African National Defence Force to instruct the role players identified in the recommendations to consider its recommendations set out by the commission and report back to her office. She further indicated that she has also written to the Secretary of Defence insofar as certain recommendations also impact on matters falling under her mandate. Next slide, please. Thank you. In view of the response of the minister and as part of our monitoring and evaluation, the Commission's Monitoring and Evaluation Committee submitted a letter to the Minister's office requesting progress on recommendations tabled. We received a response in mid-May, and it was stated that letters have been prepared for the Minister's signature to SECDEF and the Chief of the SANDF to inquire about the status. Thereafter, the Minister will be able to respond formally to the Commission's letter. That concludes the presentation, Co-Chair. Thank you for your indulgence. Over to you, Chairperson.
Thanks a lot, Commissioner Robertson. Honourable members, that's the presentation from the Defence Force Service Commission. It really took a very long time to get where we are. Let me give this opportunity to members to engage with the... that's all in a bit. Yeah, let us deal with this one and then we'll go to the last matter, which is the matters related to letters from General Holomisa. Honourable members, that's the input. Members are free to engage. I'm looking at the system to check if their hands. I can see the hand of Honourable Ryder. Honourable Ryder, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you, Ms. Robertson, and the Commissioners, not only for the presentation today, but for the work that you've put in over time. Mr. Robertson, the last time you presented to our committee, I got a little bit frustrated because I think that I got the impression that you felt that your commission is largely ignored. And that your recommendations are kind of fobbed off by the Defense Department. I get the sense from your presentation that you feel that you haven't really received much of an acknowledgement since then, and that you are treated as little more than an irritation by the minister and someone to send letters to from time to time to placate, if not to answer. Now, I'd like to hear your words, and I want you to be explicit with the committee. Do you feel that you're being taken seriously by the Ministry of Defence? That's my first question. And then my second question relates to this issue around the transfer of funds from or budget. I beg your pardon. The transfer of budget from public works to now, this is something that I have first-hand knowledge of, and it's quite an issue in the suburbs there that are not seen as part of the municipality, and so they rely entirely on public works to look after the electricity reticulation and the roads maintenance in that area. That budget transfer is urgent. How long has this been outstanding? If you can just give us a little bit of background to that, and what Public Works is saying in response, because it should be a no-brainer that it gets moved across to the Defence Force or Defence Works as soon as possible, because they have the people on the ground there. Please, Mr. Robertson and team, and by all means, please, if the other commissioners would like to give input, I'd appreciate those as well. But Chairperson, from the presentation, I think that it's problematic that the minister's not here, because it would have been nice to have her response on the fact that, I'm certainly getting the impression that the commission is not taken seriously. Thank you.
Are you done, Honorable Rider?
I'm done, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. You've raised very important. Oh, and the next online is Honorable Mare.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Commissioner, for the presentation. It is certainly much, much appreciated. I share the sentiments of my colleague, Honorable Ryder, on the fact that maybe you're not taken serious enough. I specifically want to inquire about your feedback and input with regards to the three military hospitals. And we know that they are enormously underutilized. And you have referred specifically to the ICU unit in two military hospital. And I recall when we visited the hospital, it was clear it is one of the best, but it was not populated. In other words, there was no posts. There was nobody appointed. The presidential unit, the VVIP unit, one of the best probably in the country, but nothing being spent to really use that. We've got frustrations with all three hospitals. And currently, in terms of the budget constraints, SA Medical Health Services is probably one of the biggest expense items in the budget. But we get very little feedback and productivity from that. We all know the state that one military hospital is in. We've got a beautiful hospital in Cape Town, but totally underutilized. And Three Miller has got his own challenges as well. What if there's no response to all these recommendations by you? What if, what then? Is it just, well, tough luck, now we go on? Or is there a remedy on your side? Because if it's just a talk shop, then we must be honest about this. But eventually we must get to a better situation, an improved situation, and a better utilization. In terms of the hospitals, either we must use it or we must give it to the Department of Health to operate on behalf of government. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Murray. Are there questions that members would like to ask?
General Misa.
Yes, Chairperson.
General, the floor is yours. Didn't see you.
Thank you very much. And I will speak from position of experience on this issue of the commission. Minister Lindiwe Sisulu started this commission well, and she was fighting for this commission to be independent, so as not just to be an advisory body to the minister, but that this commission should have teeth. We were promised in one of the budget speeches by Minister, Honorable Minister Mapisa Mabula, that she was going to fight for this independence. But when we asked her to provide us with a cabinet memo, which she had prepared, but we have never received any response on that. So as long as there is no political will on the part of the current leadership of the SANDF, we are going to have another experience. We are going to have another problem, which we had around 2010, if I'm not mistaken, when the soldiers resorted to get into the streets. So I would suggest that the current commission, it has done its work, it has been doing its work, we have been doing our work, but the implementation of those recommendations, which we got the problems, we got from the soldiers on the ground, I would suggest that the Joint Standing Committee on Defense should seek an appointment with the president, or write a letter if that is okay, approach to him should be to say, we come here as the commander-in-chief. The problems which cited by both commissions and the current one have not been implemented. So what should we be doing in that case? And I think we need to be strong on this issue and not to be hoodwinked again by the minister and his commanders. Because the troops on the ground have been complaining. You go to any base, same complaints, same recommendations we have submitted have not been attended to. So let us escalate this matter to the office of the president. It's enough now. Thank you.
Thanks, General, Honorable Holy Missa. Is there another hand from any member want to comment and ask a question or?
Chairperson, do you see my hand?
No, I can't see your hand from this. Now, Honorable Mutama, I can see your hand now.
Yeah. You see, myself, I just want to say it's a problem because the minister is not here. And the deputy minister also is not here. And the secretary also is not here. We'll just want to say that we need to meet with the minister and his team on this issue of the soldier. Because if we go straight to the president, he can simply say, did you meet with the minister? What did the minister say? Because we must first meet with the minister and get the direction so that we can go forward if we fail to get a full direction from the minister. I think.
Thanks, Honorable Mutama. You suggested a way forward that we need to, let's say, put this item aside. No, after debating this, we need to have a meeting. In that meeting, we will have to get answers from the minister on why is it taking this long to implement the recommendations of the commission? What are the challenges that they're facing as the ministry and as the department? And we can only do that with the minister in the meeting. And this time we don't want those inputs in writing. If they are written, they need to be presented by the minister in a meeting so that we can engage and ask further questions. Is that in order, honorable members, that we put on, you know, we put this on the in the parking lot and then engage with the minister when she comes back in terms of the, some of the answers that are not the, that needs her department. Is that in order? Let me give over to the commissioner to answer some of the questions and
sorry,
comment.
I've raised my hand. I agree with you.
Oh yeah, no, it is seconded that, yeah, maybe let's let the commissioner answer the questions that he can answer. We're still going to have a second bite on this matter. Thanks a lot. Commissioner Robertson?
Thank you, co-chair, honorable co-chair. I want to respond, but I would also like my fellow commissioners to also chip in. I would particularly urge the deputy chair. I know she's passionate about some of these issues. I would also like Dr. Esop. He worked in military health for 10 years before he went to the private sector. So he has an intimate understanding of how the military hospitals operate. So can I first ask the deputy chair if she would like to comment and add. And then I would ask Commissioner Essop and then any other commissioners who would want to chip in. Over to you, Deputy Chair, if you'd like to comment and add.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the honourable members. Chair, I think if I reflect on most of what was said, it's more comments than there are questions. I concur that in a way we are at a crossroads because our role as it stands is just to make those recommendations. We do not have the powers to impose. And what we also know at this time is that due to the current challenges that relate to finances that affect defense at large, it stands to reason. And it is something that in our strategy thinking, we are now at a position probably that is worse off than where we were when the commission initially started making recommendations, which is that the recommendations that we now have to make are ones that are almost deliberately, they have to be ones that will not attract funding because it is unlikely that there's going to be any funding to implement any of the things that we recommend according to our understanding of the state of things insofar as the budget of the DoD is concerned. So that's just that comment. So I also think what the general has said will also go a long way, not just in helping the commission to do its work, but probably putting things into perspective that will enable not just the commission, but perhaps it may even go a long way towards putting our heads together towards even starting to consider doing something with the review, the defense review that is. So that would be my comment, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thanks, Deputy Chair. Commissioner Essop, Doc, yes, would you like to come in and respond to issues about the military health, the hospitals, please?
Yes, so if we have a look across the three military hospitals, we identified issues that are similar in varying degrees. So what you're seeing is the outcome of system problems. So the some of the systems or the processes within the healthcare or SAMHSA environment don't work effectively and efficiently. So that is just one of the causes or the risk factors that actually leads to the outcome. Another example is the human resource issue. It's getting the right people, doctors and nurses within the hospital. And some of the challenges that they have is deciding to employ a doctor or a nurse in a civilian capacity or whether to actually employ them in a uniform capacity. So those are some of the challenges as well. And it's also attracting the correct expertise and also the career development of these individuals when they do enter SAMHSA. So that is part of the human resource issue. I mean, and what I've noticed is in the 10 years that I was there previously, there was a gradual deterioration of these different themes. And then there's also logistical issues and procurement issues, basically. So what I mean is we might have procurement in Pretoria ordering medical equipment where we have a person that doesn't have the total understanding of what is required on the ground. And you then end up buying a machine which you think is cheaper, but you still, and it's the only one in the country, and then you need to find consumables, you need to find people that will service these machines. Even in the X-ray department, there are machines that were not serviceable for 2 years. So then what happens is you end up referring people outside to the private healthcare sector in order to do these basic simple tests. Now, if we look at the ICU issue as well, remember the ICU supports various divisions within the hospital environment. You go for surgery, you might have to go to the ICU. You're in the normal medical ward, you have difficulty breathing, you then have to go to the ICU. If you deliver a baby and there's complications, you rely on the ICU. And due to that lack of ICU capacity, in instances, some of the surgery also has to be planned so that the ICU is available for that individual. So there's a lot of secondary costs associated with not having certain functions within the hospital environment. And so that's what I can say in summary. I can go into detail. If there's any other questions, I'm more than welcome to take those questions and even reply to them. So I have a fairly good understanding of what was happening on the ground as well. So what I'm speaking about is the three hospitals. There are also challenges within the area military health formation, and those are all the clinics in the various regions. And that also relates to staff and equipment. So as we can see, there are common themes, and it's also related to systems and human resources within the healthcare system within SANS.
Thanks, Doc. There was one question from Honorable Ryder with respect to the transfer of funds and the works formation. May I ask, I don't have particular information about that. Can I ask the head of the secretariat, Mr. Motsepe, if he has any information about this issue? Mr. Motsepe?
Thank you, Chair. I do not have the detailed information or response with regard to this matter, but what I can share with the committee is that it is my understanding that there is a process that has already started between the Department of Defense and the Public Works with regard to this matter. And then I think there will be more light that can be shared even at an executive level with regard to this, because of the challenges that were experienced by the department in as far as refurbishment or upgrading or the renovation of the buildings or infrastructure within the department. So that is all that I can share, Chair, with a definite knowledge that the process of ensuring that the transfer of the budget from public works to the Department of Defense happens has already started to a certain degree, but the details I think can still be sourced from the relevant structures that are handling that. Talking about the from the logistic division, Chief Law, and then other relevant structures within the department. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Motsepe. Do any other commissioners want to comment before I round up?
No, Chairperson.
Sure. Okay. Thanks, co-chair. This has been a very useful and illuminating discussion. Maybe I can just make a couple of comments. I agree entirely with the deputy chair. A lot of the issues here are comments rather than direct questions. But let me respond to say that I do think we can make a difference. You see, a lot of these issues I've raised here in terms of the recommendations, accommodation, infrastructure, facilities, command and control, career development, education, training and development, human resources. Sometimes you can go at the macro level and change it. But you can also, when you have follow-up visits, you go to particular units on particular bases. Although it's military as command and control, it doesn't always mean that you can't get things done at that unit level. So from our perspective, I think the follow-up to bases is absolutely critical. Clearly, during 2020 and the early part of 21, we were hobbled by restrictions around COVID-19 and all of the attendant difficulties around that. But that notwithstanding, I certainly think that some of these issues don't need the chief of the SANDF or the chief of human resources or the chief of services. Sometimes it depends on management issues. And the only way you can really deal with some of those is by actually, you can make a telephone call, sure, but it's a visiting basis for me. That's critical. Let me give you one example. A couple of months ago, we went to the headquarters of Special Forces. They gave us a presentation and they showed us photographs of their base in Saldanha Bay. And they spoke, the commanding officer, the GOC, spoke about the buildings in the dilapidated state and still there's asbestos there. And yet, in 2015, 2016, we made a number of recommendations around removing asbestos from buildings. So the only way you could really see is by visiting physically and seeing whether that is complied. Those are for me some of the issues that at a micro level you can begin to change. But co-chairperson, I think my fellow commissioners have commented sufficiently. Suffice to say that we will continue to work and push for further meetings with SecDef. SecDef has in principle agreed, as I indicated. We need to push that through. And see whether some of the recommendations that we make can be implemented, notwithstanding the financial implications. Thank you, Co-Chairperson.
Thanks a lot, Commissioner and your commissioners, for really, you know, clarifying us on some of the things that you talked about and the gaps that we can see. You see, the portfolio committee has gone many times on oversight visit to facilities. And the picture that we get is not different from the one that you have received when you visited the joint operations, you know, or the kind of photos that you received from the soldiers. Our members have seen possibly worse things in the areas where they went to, but I think we need to focus on the welfare of our soldiers, even with our budget cut by more than, you know, by billions of rands. But still, we need to provide service and make sure that our soldiers live better, normal lives of soldiers in a peaceful condition. Let me thank you and then release you. Thank you very much. There will be a second bite on this one. We may invite you, or we may only just invite the minister to come and, you know, talk to us about what was discussed here in this meeting. The conditions, the hospital, even when we're in in the Mozambique, on the Mozambican border. Soldiers living in tents on the fence, near the fences, as you know, as border security. But there are water facilities, and I've seen where it's an open drum. So when there is dust, their water will have dust. You know, so those kind of things really goes the way in building the morale, the high morale of the soldiers. We shall engage with the minister, and if this committee sees it fit, we may invite you to that meeting. Thank you very much. You are really
thank you very much, and good night. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable members, we've got the two issues on the agenda. The last one would be consideration and adoption of outstanding minutes. The next item is a follow-up on issues related to letters from General Holomisa. I'll start by saying that we received responses from the minister. In the first place, let's say, the letters that were written to Dr. Gulube and the minister were delivered on time to them. We got the responses, particularly the response of the minister. And now, as we speak today, the minister is not in the house and the deputy minister is not here. I'm trying to get what will be the way forward on this matter. Do we shelve it until the minister arrives, or until we have an appointment with, until the minister, you know, appears before the committee? We understand why the minister is not here, why the ministry is not here. Should we put this matter in the parking lot and deal with it when they are here? Or can we just continue without them being in the meeting? I'm putting this matter before your capable hands, honorable members. The floor is yours.
Chairperson?
Honorable Holomisa, General.
I would suggest that...
General, yes, the Honorable Holomis.
Yes, sir. I would suggest, Chairperson, that we continue with the discussions, because the minister has responded. And I didn't see the SACDEF response. But the minister has responded, and he has denied all the allegations by the whistleblowers. This committee, therefore, has to decide whether it accepts her version. The whistleblowers had given us information which we have agreed, including our legal advisors, that there was a prima facie evidence. So what is needed really today is for the committee to emerge from this meeting with a decision on which institution with powers to conduct an investigation, first to verify these allegations. For instance, the minister is admitting that there was communication between herself and the service provider. She will, when a formal investigation I submit is underway, would have to explain the context of the WhatsApp messages. There is, therefore, a need for investigation. So I would suggest, therefore, that we continue with the process.
Chairperson, Chairperson, from my side, obviously the allegations are quite severe, in my opinion, and we have agree to that. We got the legal advice. Quite clearly, it is within our competency to investigate this. There's no doubt about that. We obviously sit in a not a catch 22 situation, but just in terms of what is the next step. You know, like one would expect in any battle or case or cases, whether it's before court of law or wherever, that you know, those people alleged to be involved normally would say, you know, no guilty. You know, they would argue that. There's no doubt about that. What we must obviously now try, in my opinion, and therefore we must obviously be guided by our legal advisors. I see Suhain Isaac is present in the meeting, is to see whether we must now only deal with that the minister must answer, that indicates that, as General Olamisa has said, or whether we must look at all the allegations. Obviously, if we look at all the allegations, now we will have to come up with witnesses, whether it is the whistleblower, him or herself, that will come and testify in obviously in confidence, and where even, you know, the identity of that person might not even be, you know, divulged to all of us in the meeting. But there must be a process, and it must be a legal process and legal guided process, that we must make sure that we take the right steps in the right way, in the right manner as well. So clearly we cannot now close the book. You know, we will have to go forward, and it's not only in our interest, but certainly in the minister's interest as well. And if she's not guilty, then that must be the outcome. But if we cannot assume that only because she said that, no, she's not guilty. So you know, we will have to go forward, but we must in every step be guided by our legal advisors. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there other members who want to comment?
No, Chair, I think I'm welcome.
Yeah, yes, Chair.
Let me check if there's Honorable Mute, followed by Honorable Mutamai. I think those are the only two hands I see on the gadget. Over to you, Honorable Mute.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, for the opportunity, and good evening to honorable members. Chair, I just want to find out, because I had one honorable member, I think it's Honorable Marais, indicating that legal advisors are present in the meeting, so that we take a decision on the basis of informed legal opinion or legal perspective with regard to how we should then move forward with the matter, because the first step has been undertaken. Allegations were brought to this particular committee, not direct by the so-called whistleblower, but by one member of the committee, in the form of General Olamisa. Now, we have said these allegations need to be responded to by those that these allegations are leveled against. And we have received the response from Minister. I've not yet seen as well the response from the SecDef, if it has reached the committee secretariat as yet. But now my worry is one, I'm not sure whether the committee can then begin to assume the responsibility of a commission of some sort, or an arbitration or a court of law, where it will then interrogate or subpoena witnesses, or subpoena the person who makes this allegation. What are the constitutional powers of the committee to undertake such an investigation? If I can just get clarity, maybe I will make a follow up, because we must avoid doing the work of institutions that are empowered to do such particular investigations and find out what really transpired. What are the facts about the allegations made, leveled against whoever they are leveled against, and the authenticity of those responses? I'm not sure if we can get a clarity from the legal advisors on what steps should the committee take upon receiving responses, and if we are not happy with the responses, what is the next step to follow? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Mutle. Honorable Mutamai, the floor is yours, in fact.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, this is a very, very serious issue, especially when we talk about the issue of corruption. And when we mention somebody a witness who revealed this and who is not here, and the minister just submit an information about this, I think it was going to be better for the minister to be here and the person who revealed this information must also be here, so that we can get the full information about this. But if then we are going to say maybe we listen to the information, and our information is going to be written to us, and therefore we take it otherwise. Maybe the Honorable Hulumisa or the very same person who pressed the party is not going to be happy, and we will say, I'll take the matter to court. But if both of those, the person who revealed the information and the minister are here, then I think it's going to be easy for us to take a decision on it. I thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Mutamai. Is there another input from the members?
The Chairperson?
I don't see any other hand. Yes.
Yes, Chairperson, I just want to state that we have not received a response from the Secretary, or the former Secretary of Defense. Today we sent another email to him to remind him, and we are waiting for his response. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thanks a million. Honourable members, those are the issues. I think from what the Honourable Mutle said and what the Honourable Mutamai said, I'll say we need to get maybe the statement from the whistleblower to us that these are the matters that he's raising or she's raising, without divulging his or her name. We know at the Zondo Commission, there had been people who testify and their names are kept, they are not in the public domain. They are not even shown on the screen when they do their presentations. I'll just like to check with the legal team. When somebody wants to be anonymous, does it can they at least write a statement that they sign and say, this is the issues that he or she is presenting as the complainant. I wonder what it's to say that there's, you know, there's this thing is Xhosa kuthiwa umuntu uve ngove. I don't want to say that the general uve ngove, you know, but that the general has actually talked to the person who has the first hand information, who is the victim of this alleged extortion and issues. Is it possible to deal with these matters without seeing a statement that comes from the complainant? This is what I want to throw to the legal team, and let's say to the members and the legal team for a way forward. Can we get a word from the legal team?
Thank you, Chairperson. It's Sue Ann Isaac here from Legal Services. With regard to your question as to whether the person can remain anonymous, yes, they can remain anonymous if they wish to, and they can make a statement. We obviously don't know who the person is, so we will have to assess whether the Protected Disclosures Act applies to them. But there is a general clause that allows people to make protected disclosures, so they can make a statement without revealing their identity, if they so wish to do so. Chairperson, with regard to the way forward, the committee hasn't received one response as yet, so we hope to get the response from the former Secretary of Defense. With regard to the minister's response, Chairperson, we can divide her response in two parts. Firstly, with regard to the travel allegations, the minister has made extensive, she has responded quite extensively, providing detailed information and even supporting documents as to substantiate her comment. So with regard to that, the committee can assess the evidence provided by the minister and determine as to whether they're satisfied with that information. Is there specific issues that they wish to raise with the minister regarding the travel, and that they can do, as to firstly whether they're satisfied with the information and there's any other specific matters that they want to raise regarding the travel. With regard to the allegations of payment, Chairperson, the minister was given two opportunities to respond, and she has denied all the allegations made against her. Obviously, that is, creates a difficulty of we have a person who has made various allegations, and we have the minister's bare denial. She hasn't really gone into great detail as to the specifics and the dates of the allegations. So if the committee is not satisfied with the response, they need to read a response. The members need to read the response and determine if they're not satisfied. And if they're not, and they want to put direct questions to the minister, because she's already been given two opportunities to respond, then it's within the committee's powers to call the minister and maybe put direct questions with specific questions related to the allegations to the minister. So those are the possible options to the committee on the way forward. Thank you, Chairperson.
So you're saying that it's possible to get the statement from the complainant, that is the person who's being extorted by, allegedly being extorted by the minister.
Yes, Chairperson.
Before we can engage and also get information from the SECDEF, Dr. Gululu.
Yes, Chairperson, if the complainant wishes to make a statement and do so anonymously, that will be possible. We can also wait for the information from the SECDEF. And forgot to mention, a further option would be that there are certain other allegations that can be independently verified. So if the committee wants to find out, for instance, about the employment of a particular person where the allegations relate to that, then the committee can do so independently of the minister. For instance, write to the department regarding that appointment, and with regard to the service provided Arms Corps, the committee can also independently verify that allegation.
So, yeah, so there's various steps available to the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Farah, thanks a lot, Beth. Yeah, it is possible the person can give evidence without disclosing his or her identity. But I just want to check, is it possible for this person to write a statement to us? Because now what we are hearing is the person confided in General Holomisa, and then who brought the letters to us now. And then based on the complaint from the general and our engagement in the last meetings, we asked the minister to respond and doctor and the deaf cert. We received the responses from the minister. I went through them. She's accounting for every step by step on what she did, but that is what she's saying. I think we should send a message to the complainant through the general, if that is possible, for the complainant or the whistleblower to write that something in a, you know, like a statement or something, say this is what happened and blah blah blah. That's a
Jefferson, can I maybe make a suggestion there? I would, because you know the legal services said, Ms. Isaacs has said that it obviously depends on the category of that person. We don't know who that person is. My suggestion is that maybe General Holomisa must have a discussion with our legal advisors. I mean, things obviously, if whatever is said between them, I'm sure this Ms. Isaacs will deal with it in terms of legal privilege. And then, you know, if something can be arranged via that, that if that person is prepared to give us an affidavit, for instance, and it is then separate, given maybe to legal services, and they can carry it forward to us. Obviously, we must protect that person in terms of the Whistleblowers Protection Act. But we must try every opportunity to get that information, and if there are further evidence. That's my first thing. And I think in terms of the next step that Isaacs has given us, those other points, issues that we can independently look at in the meantime. And obviously, you know, try a further time with the minister to say, can we have a discussion between us on those points that is maybe still challengeable in terms of what she has given us, because we have to do it in the right way. We have to make sure that we dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's. If we do it that way, nobody can afterwards point a finger to us and saying that, you know, you haven't done your duty and your responsibility. I mean, for us, this is not... We have got nobody in our target. We've only got a mandate and a responsibility, and we must execute that. And whatever comes from that, you know, whatever it may be, it will be. It must be. Thank you.
You know, our mandate as this committee is to play oversight over the executive, and that is what we're going to do, and that will be what we've been doing. Yeah, and so are there comments from members on the inputs given by on in this meeting?
Chairperson.
Yes, Honorable Holomisa.
Thank you very much for the guidelines by the legal advice. What I would like to know from them is, What is the difference between a statement and an affidavit? If they can just answer me on that, so that maybe this whistleblower, we are still going to have a problem if he or she doesn't want to come forward. But if there was an inquiry of some kind with some powers for that committee or that individual who has been tasked to summon the whistleblower so that he or she can cross-question that whistleblower. But if the whistleblower will just submit the statement without a formal inquiry, there might be some problems, especially by the board which will be investigating as to how do they interact with that particular individual if it is not formal. So I don't know whether I'm putting this issue correctly. Perhaps the legal advice can advise us. At what stage does a committee in Parliament decide to subpoena people? Is it done on hearings like this, or is it first of all have to be formalized and the terms of reference are given to all concerned? And when do one take an oath in that instance? Please, can you clarify for us?
Thanks, Honorable Holomisa. May we give the opportunity to our legal team, advise us on this one. Is it possible to get an affidavit or a statement from the whistleblower, even if they do not attach their names, so that, you know, when we engage with that, we'll be knowing that we're engaging with, because now what we're engaging with is what we get from the general, you know. But at least if you get some affidavit or something from the complainant, without even saying who they are, whatever, but say, I'm the complainant on this thing, I gave this information to the general, and what he's saying is actually what I said to him. And these are the issues that I've raised. I'm just trying to check whether do we need to do that, or can we go take other steps further without going through this, what I think will be the initial stage of the inquiry, if there's to be any. Let me give over to the legal team, and let's see if there's another member want to...
Chairperson, maybe just before legal services respond, is this just an idea? Isn't it possible that we can have a subcommittee, maybe a multi-party subcommittee from our Joint Standing Committee on Defence, that can maybe also sit with legal services, and maybe, you know, that we can maybe delve deeper into this, which is maybe is sometimes better for a subcommittee to do that, who must then report back to this committee. Ms. Isaac, I don't know whether that is also an option. Thank you.
But I think that will depend on us as members of parliament, whether we want to do that or not. And it's not for the legal team to decide for us. But what we want to check is what process can we follow, because we want to take this matter forward.
Chairperson.
Who's speaking?
The Honorable Mutamai.
Oh, Honorable Mutamai.
What about Nagiwale problem, you know? Okay, the issue here, whistleblower. Then a whistleblower who feels the Honorable General Holomisa the issue. And if us no ask no sahela, how are we going to deal with this issue? Like now, if we return out the reply minister, okay, the reply is kiena, nka a verdict ya mutor samutibi, or the complaint ya mutor samutibi, then we know this thing, the way nka ngatengi right or high right. How are we going to know or satisfied? Because you can't just simple We are going to wait, or maybe we start with like next month or next time, because we have to face him. We have to ask him questions. And then, so our Hokabale Batuwa came from the committee. Baba Kakwana Kumuta, or Hutla Yang or Hubiana, Lanala, then the information. I can't deal with KZL or Mutu Arimute, Arimoni. I want to get it. You want to hide over it or repeat. But when I don't say so again, the case here, magistrate, lady social worker, but the legal on the case up until the person are final guilt. Madam Harto Dila Gamuti Longor, we don't know her money, it's going to be a problem.
Thanks, Honorable Mutam. Can anyone help in summarizing what Honorable Mutam has said? He's actually saying exactly the same thing that, the suggestion that we need to get something from that person, because what we are hearing comes from General Holomisa, not because we don't trust him, but we just want to make sure that that person writes something to us without even disclosing who they are, and then the process will be taken forward. Let's get the, that is what I think Honorable Zama is saying in short. Unless if there's another person who want to add in my understanding of what the Honorable Mutama said. In the absence
yes,
of
sir.
Word...
Yes,
oh, yes,
sir.
Monis.
Just to Honorable add on Mr. that. Yes, just to add on that to say, will a statement or an affidavit be enough on its own to provide us with information that is required or evidence? Now, the issue is that we need to interrogate the whistleblower or the complainant so that we are able to ask questions of clarity from him or her, so that we as members of this committee are able to satisfy ourselves with whatever evidence that would have been written to us in a form of a statement or an affidavit. So the question was, is it only enough for us to receive an affidavit from him, and we must then satisfy ourselves that it is evidence that we will also then be able to base our analysis or our decision or our recommendation, or we also need to take it as far as having an engagement, an interrogation of some sort with the whistleblower himself. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson. Yes, I'm trying to check who is the next person on the line.
Okay. Holomisa.
Okay, General Holomisa, Honorable Holomisa, the floor is yours.
You will recall that I requested the legal advisor to guide us on this way forward. Can she address us on this?
Yeah, I was first checking if members are have other things to say so that the legal advisor will deal with those. Let's give over to the legal team. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to comment, but Mr. Njikela is also in the meeting. He is the senior legal advisor, and he will also want to add. I think I was asked about the difference between an affidavit and a statement. An affidavit is more of a formal statement sworn under oath. So it generally, carries a bit more weight because the person has decided to take the oath. The issue about the person being a whistleblower and making a statement, it would depend if the person wants to do so, then we would have to use the Protected Disclosures Act and to determine where the person falls in and to who the person makes the protected disclosure. Notwithstanding the fact that there isn't a statement, there is obviously evidence before the committee for them to consider. So as to whether the person does make a statement or not does not necessarily mean that the process cannot go forward, but it would help greatly if the person does wish to make a statement, because we will have a first-hand account of the information. At present, we have various facts which need to be verified, and which the minister needs to answer to. I think Mr. Njikiela would want, like to come in at this point with your permission, Chairperson.
Okay, thanks.
Over to you, Mr. Njikiela.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I may be struggling with connectivity. I hope you can hear me clearly.
Yes, I do.
Chairperson, I just want to take the committee a step back before we even determine what must happen going forward. You will remember, Chairperson, in our advice to the committee, we said two things. The first thing we said was that the matter falls within the mandate of the committee to investigate, to inquire into it, in as far as it relates to the Department of Defense. The second issue we said, Chairperson, in the opinion, was that the committee must give the minister an opportunity to respond to the allegations contained in the letter by the Honorable Olomisa. The minister has now responded on two occasions. It seems to me that the first step for the committee is to make an assessment of whether the minister has satisfactorily dealt with the issues raised in the letters that were submitted by General Olomisa. Depending on the outcome of that assessment by the committee can make one of two decisions. One of the decisions that can be made is that the committee may say, we are not satisfied with the answers that the minister has given. And perhaps I can go back to the letters that I have seen from the minister just in a minute as to how they should be assessed. The committee can then say, we are not satisfied. We think the best approach to the circumstances is for us to invite the minister to appear before the committee, for her to answer specific questions that the committee may have and which the committee feels were not sufficiently responded to in the letter. That is the first option that the committee can exercise. The second option is the committee can say, we have read the letters. We are satisfied the minister has satisfactorily answered all the questions, and therefore there is no further issue to inquire into. And I think the committee now, in as much as legal, we will want to provide guidance, which is what we are bound to do. But I think the first decision is for the committee to make an assessment based on the information that is now at its disposal, whether this answers the question satisfactorily. And if it's not, what then needs to happen? Do we want the minister to come and appear and deal with the questions that she may not have answered in the letters? Now, if I may just do this, Chairperson, the committee asked very specific questions in the second letter on which it invited the minister to respond. The minister has opted to respond to them in a particular way. And that particular way is to say, I deny all the allegations, and I'm putting the complainant to the proof of those allegations. That is the thread that is running through most of the response that you got from the minister. Is that satisfactory? That is an assessment that only the committee can make, not the legal services. If the committee is not satisfied, then the committee has an option to invite the minister to appear before the committee so that it can deal with the issue and bring it to finality. The minister has already had two options to respond to those issues. So maybe the written responses may not be the right way to deal with this issue. The committee has the oversight obligations to do that, and it has the power in law to do that. So the committee must debate that amongst itself and make a decision on the way forward based on what has been put before it by General Olomisa and the minister. And I think, Chairperson, that's the intervention I can make at this stage.
Fair enough.
Chair?
Who's raising your hand?
Beakers.
Oh, Honorable Beakers.
You're yes, welcome. Chair. Oh, no, Chair, there was just a question from Honorable Marais on the establishment of a smaller committee. Can the legal department please respond to that one also? Is it possible that we as a committee can, for example, establish a smaller group to do the assessment or something like that? Honorable Marais was asking that. Thank you, Chair.
And maybe it, just to add to that question, how should that small committee be composed? Because there was a talk about the multi-party. And then here we are dealing with a matter of the joint standing committee.
Yes.
I guess that if there is to be any committee, it would be a committee comprising of members of the joint standing committee, because these are matters that are, yeah, these are the deep matters, and they've got a history in them. Yeah, that's the input from our legal team, honorable members. Which one will be the way to go? Do we call? Because the minister may. We can call the minister to come and give a presentation of this letter, that the responses, so that we ask questions and matters of, and clarify ourselves. And then after that, then we can look at the matters raised by the other people. Because we cannot compare what the minister says in terms of denial from what the accusers are saying, you know. So, yeah, let's see how members will engage on this one. I'm waiting for hands. I don't see any hand here now.
Yeah, mine is up.
Honorable Marais.
Chairperson, obviously, you know, the legal advice is always so valuable, because, I mean, we only know in part, but they know more from a holistic legal point of view. My opinion is, obviously, we must pursue this case further. I think, one, we must invite the minister to have the interaction with us so that we have got a better understanding of what she's saying, and that we can ask questions for clarity. We must obviously pursue the previous Secretary of Defense, that he must respond in details. And I would still make a case out that that General Olomisa and legal services get together so that they can determine the category of this person who is claiming, you know, whistleblower status. And obviously also discuss the potential of getting a either a statement or an affidavit from her or him, and where they can still protect the identity of that person. Because if the person's identity is not revealed, then I want to have the assurance that we have crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's from a legal perspective. Because this can either blow up in our face, or, you know, we can get credit for the way that we are dealing with this, irrespective of the outcome. And that, my feeling, is what we must do, so that we can stand up afterwards and we can defend it irrespective of the outcome. I so suggest. Thank you.
And, thanks for the suggestion.
And then in terms of what Ms. Beekers has asked, which the legal service has not responded, you know, if it is obviously something very sensitive, and you can have a smaller committee of our members, or you know, if the whole committee can go into obviously only elected members of parliament, I suppose, not officials, go into that even a close session with the minister, or even you know other people that might come forward that can be better dealt with in that way. You know, we must just make sure that from a legal perspective, we're doing it the right way and the most defensible way. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Mutamai, your hand is up.
Yes, you see, on the issue of the small Onyana committee that can deal with this issue with the minister, I think it will be good. Maybe even the very same whistleblower, he can come, or because my problem is only one, when the whistleblower, he will need to say something and he will not say that as he won't be there or she won't be there. It will be a very bad people, I think.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Mutamai. Can you lower your hand, because I get confused by this. Honorable Mare, thank you very much. Honorable members, we got a input from the legal team. There are further questions that were asked, and some of the questions relate to, let me not give my opinion. Legal team, do you want to further comment on the matters raised by the members?
Chairperson, with regard to whether the joint committee can form a subcommittee, I would ask that you just give us some time to consult on that. I'm not entirely 100% sure, but I think there may be the possibility of the committee forming a task team. The rules are very specific, so I would just like to take some advice from the NA table and the NTT table because it's a joint committee. But there may be a possibility that the members can form a task team to determine it. But we will come back to the committee by tomorrow with something concrete.
Thank you. Is there any other comment from the members before I
Chair? Chair.
Honorable Modise.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to suggest that probably the written responses, the committee should then decide that they are not quite enough. So probably we then need to take a decision on the fact that we need to have a discussion with the minister herself so that we are able to interrogate her responses so that we satisfy ourselves. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Chair?
Honorable Mude.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I want to propose a way forward so that we pass this matter for today, Chair. Firstly, let's solicit the response from the sector, so that we've got all responses with regard to this allegation made. Secondly, I want to also propose that, Chair, you and the co-chair facilitate for... Secondly, that you and the co-chair facilitate for a closed session, probably. If not permitted, then a meeting delegated to deal specifically with this item outside the programmed meeting of the Joint Standing Committee. And I think because it's on visual, colleagues will not have a problem of availing themselves to attend to those meetings, particularly to deal with this matter. And those meetings, Chair, will then be able to provide a direction in terms of all the inputs that were made here as to how we should then move forward in handling this matter. So that is my proposal, Chair, on a way forward. Thank you very much.
There's a proposal on the floor. Any proposal on way forward? Yes, Honorable Nkosi.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, without any waste of time, I would love to second the proposal made by Honorable Thabo Motlhe. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Is there any other hand?
Chair, I think in the interest of us moving forward, I think we can support what the Honorable Motlhe suggested, as long as the our legal services still apply their minds to the matters that we have given them, and also in terms of how we can interact with a whistleblower, in the right way. And then also that they apply their minds to, the possibility of a task team. If we can get that feedback, and in the spirit of moving forward, then I would say let's do that. Let we have some progress going forward.
Thanks a lot. Going forward, Honourable Members, I think we need to first engage. Get time where we'll engage with the minister so she present her responses. And then we can ask questions, and then say we've got a report from her. But at the same time, we need information from the whistleblower. Something, it could be either a statement or an affidavit or whatever, but at least we know there's somebody who exists who has written something to us. Because presently the issues are raised by it. I'm not saying that he wasn't talked to, but we need something tangible from the person so that going forward. And then we'll give this opportunity to the legal team to study this and give us a way forward after applying their minds. With those few words, I would like to thank everybody for having been in this meeting. We will interact with the legal team and the committee secretaries. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much.